12. Dennison tried to beat down his self-consciousness. Time and again, he made a groping motion as though to hitch upward the pants he wasn't wearing. He wore only sandals and the barest of briefs, which were uncomfortably tight. And, of course, he carried the blanket. Selene, who was similarly accoutred, laughed. "Now, Ben, there's nothing wrong with your bare body, barring a certain flabbiness. It's perfectly in fashion here. In fact, take off your briefs if they're binding you." "No," muttered Dennison. He shifted the blanket so that it draped over his abdomen, and she snatched it from him. She said, "Now give me that thing. What kind of a lunarite will you make if you bring your Earth Puritanism here? You know that prudery is only the other side of prurience. The words are even on the same page in the dictionary." "I have to get used to it, Selene." "You might start by looking at me once in a while, without having your glance slide off me as though I were coated with oil. You look at other women quite efficiently, I notice." "If I look at you, then you'll seem too interested and you'll be embarrassed. But if you look hard, you'll get used to it and you'll stop noticing. Look, I'll stand still and you stare. I'll take off my briefs." Dennison groaned. "Selene, there are people all around and you're making intolerable fun of me. Please keep walking and let me get used to the situation." "All right. But I hope you notice the people who pass us don't look at us." "They don't look at you. They look at me, all right. They've probably never seen so old-looking and ill-shaped a person." "They probably haven't," agreed Selene cheerfully. "But they'll just have to get used to it." Dennison walked on in misery, conscious of every gray hair on his chest and of every quiver of his paunch. It was only when the passageway thinned out and the people passing them were fewer in number that he began to feel a certain relief. He looked about him curiously now, not as aware of Selene's conical breasts as he had been, nor of her smooth thighs. The corridor seemed endless. "How far have we come?" he asked. "Are you tired?" Selene was contrite. "We could have taken a scooter. I forget you're from Earth."
"I should hope you do. Isn't that the ideal for an immigrant? I'm not the least bit tired. Hardly the least bit tired, at any rate. What I am is a little cold."
"Purely your imagination, Ben," said Selene firmly. "You just think you ought to feel cold because so much of you is bare. Put it out of your head."
"Easy to say," he sighed. "I'm walking well, I hope."
"Very well. I'll have you kangarooing yet.
And participating in glider races down the surface slopes. Remember, I'm moderately advanced in years. But really, how far have we come?"
2 miles, I should judge."
"Good Lord! How many miles of corridors are there altogether?"
"I'm afraid I don't know. The residential corridors make up comparatively little of the total. There are the mining corridors, the geological ones, the industrial, the mycological. I'm sure there must be several hundred miles altogether."
"Do you have maps?"
"Of course there are maps. We can't work blind. I mean you, personally." "Well, no, not with me. But I don't need maps for this area. It's quite familiar to me. I used to wander about here as a child. These are old corridors. Most of the new corridors, and we average 2 or 3 miles of new corridors a year, I think, are in the north. I couldn't work my way through them without a map, for untold sums, maybe not even with a map."
"Where are we heading?"
"I promised you an unusual sight. No, not me, so don't say it, and you'll have it. It's the moon's most unusual mine, and it's completely off the ordinary tourist trails."
"Don't tell me you've got diamonds on the moon."
"Better than that." The corridor walls were unfinished here, gray rock, dimly but adequately lit by patches of electroluminescence. The temperature was comfortable, and at a steady mildness, with ventilation so gently effective, there was no sensation of wind. It was hard to tell here that a couple of hundred feet above were the surface subjected to alternate frying and freezing as the sun came and went on its grand bi-weekly swing from horizon to horizon, and then underneath and back.
"Is all this airtight?" asked Dennison, suddenly uncomfortably aware that he was not far below the bottom of an ocean of vacuum that extended upward through all infinity. Oh, yes, those walls are impervious. They're all booby-trapped, too. If the air pressure drops as much as 10% in any section of the corridors, there is such a hooting and howling from sirens as you've never heard, and such a flashing of arrows and blazing of signs directing you to safety as you've never seen. How often did this happen?
Not often. I don't think anyone has been killed through airlac for at least 5 years.
Then, with sudden defensiveness, you have natural catastrophes on Earth. A big quake or a tidal wave could kill thousands.
No argument, Selene.
He threw up his hands. I surrender.
All right, she said. I didn't mean to get excited.
Do you hear that?
She stopped in an attitude of listening.
Dennison listened too and shook his head.
Suddenly, he looked around.
It's so quiet. Where is everybody? Are you sure we're not lost?
This isn't a natural cavern with unknown passageways. You have those on Earth, haven't you? I've seen photographs.
Yes, most of them are limestone caves formed by water. That certainly can't be the case of the moon, can it?
So we can't be lost, said Selene, smiling. If we're alone, put it down to superstition.
To what?
Dennison looked startled, and his face creased in an expression of disbelief.
Don't do that, she said. You get all lined.
That's right, smooth out. You look much better than you did when you first arrived, you know. That's low gravity and exercise.
And trying to keep up with nude young ladies who have an uncommon amount of off time and an uncommon lack of better things to do than go on busmen's holidays.
Now you're treating me like a tourist guide again, and I'm not nude.
At that, even nudity is less frightening than intuitionism. But what's this about superstition?
Not really superstition, I suppose, but most of the people of the city tend to stay away from this part of the corridor complex.
But why?
Because of what I'm going to show you.
They were walking again.
Hear it now?
She stopped, and Dennison listened anxiously. He said, You mean that small tapping sound?
Tap, tap.
Is that what you mean?
She ran ahead in slow, loping strides, with the slow-motion movement of the Lunarite in unhurried flight.
He followed her, attempting to ape the gait.
Here, here.
Dennison's eye followed Selene's eagerly pointing finger.
Good Lord, he said. Where is it coming from?
There was a drip of what was clearly water. A slow dripping, with each drip striking a small ceramic trough that led into the rock wall.
From the rocks. We do have water on the moon, you know. Most of it we can bake out of gypsum. Enough for our purposes, since we conserve it pretty well.
I know, I know. I've never yet been able to manage one complete shower. How you people manage to stay clean, I don't know.
I told you, first wet yourself, then turn off the water and smear just a little detergent on you. You rub it.
Oh, Ben, I'm not going through it yet again. And there's nothing on the moon to get you all that dirty anyway.
But that's not what we're talking about.
In one or two places, there are actually water deposits, usually as ice near the surface in a mountain shadow. If we locate it, it drips out. This one has been dripping since the corridor was first driven through, and that was 8 years ago.
But why the superstition?
Well, obviously, water is the great material resource on which the moon depends. We drink it, wash with it, grow our food with it, make our oxygen with it, keep everything going with it. Free water can't help but get a lot of respect. Once this drip was discovered, plans to extend the tunnels in this direction were abandoned till it stopped. The corridor walls were even left unfinished.
That sounds like superstition right there.
Well, a kind of awe, maybe. It wasn't expected to last for more than a few months. Such drips never do.
Well, after this one had passed its first anniversary, it began to seem eternal. In fact, that's what it's called, the eternal. You'll even find it marked that way on the maps.
Naturally, people have come to attach importance to it, a feeling that if it stops, it will mean some sort of bad fortune.
Dennison laughed.
Selene said warmly, "No one really believes it, but everyone part believes it. You see, it's not really eternal, and it must stop sometime. As a matter of fact, the rate of drift is only about a third of what it was when it was first discovered, so that it is slowly drying. I imagine people feel that if it happened to stop when they were actually here, they would share in the bad fortune. At least, that's the rational way of explaining their reluctance to come here."
"I take it that you don't believe this."
"Whether I believe it or not isn't the point. You see, I'm quite certain that it won't stop sharply enough for anyone to be able to take the blame. It will just drift slower and slower and slower, and no one will ever be able to pinpoint the exact time when it stopped. So why worry?"
"I agree with you."
"I do, however," she said, making the transition smoothly, "have other worries, and I'd like to discuss them with you while we're alone." She spread out the blanket and sat on it cross-legged.
"Which is why you really brought me here?"
He dropped to hip and elbow, facing her. She said, "See, you can look at me easily now. You're getting used to me." And really, there were surely times on Earth when mere nudity wasn't something to be exclaimed over.
"Times and places," agreed Dennison, "but not since the passing of the crisis. In my lifetime..."
"Well, on the moon, do as the Lunarites do is a good enough guide for behavior."
"Are you going to tell me why you really brought me here, or shall I suspect you of planning seduction?"
"I could carry through seduction quite comfortably at home, thank you. This is different. The surface would have been best, but getting ready to go out on the surface would have attracted a great deal of attention. Coming here didn't, and this place is the only spot in town where we can be reasonably safe from interruption." She hesitated.
"Well," said Dennison,
"Darren is angry, very angry, in fact."
"I'm not surprised. I warned you he would be if you told him that I knew you were an intuitionist."
"Why did you feel it so necessary to tell him?"
"Because it is difficult to keep things for long from my companion. Probably, though, he doesn't consider me that any longer."
"I'm sorry." "Oh, it was turning sour anyway. It's lasted long enough. What bothers me more, much more, is that he violently refuses to accept your interpretation of the pionizer experiments you ran after the surface observations."
"I told you the way it would be."
"He said he had seen your results."
He glanced at them and grunted.
"It's rather disillusioning. Does everyone just believe what he wants to?"
"As long as possible, sometimes longer."
"What about you?"
"You mean, am I human?" "Certainly. I don't believe I'm really old. I believe I'm quite attractive. I believe you seek out my company because you think I'm charming, even when you insist on turning the conversation to physics."
"No, I mean it."
"Well, I suspect Neville told you that the data I had gathered were not significant beyond the margin of error, which makes them doubtful, and that's true enough. And yet I prefer to believe they have the meaning I expected them to have to begin with."
"Just because you want to believe that?"
"Not just because. Look at it this way. Suppose there is no harm in the pump, but that I insist on thinking there is harm. In that case, I will turn out to be a fool, and my scientific reputation will be badly damaged. But I am a fool in the eyes of the people who count, and I have no scientific reputation."
"Why is that, then?" "You've hinted around the tale several times. Can't you tell me the whole story?"
"You'd be surprised how little there is to tell. At the age of 25, I was still such a child that I had to amuse myself by insulting a fool, for no reason other than that he was a fool. Since his folly was not his fault, I was the greater fool to do it. My insult drove him to heights he couldn't possibly have scaled otherwise."
"You're talking of Hallam?"
"Yes, of course. And as he rose, I fell. And eventually it dropped me to the moon."
"Is that so bad?"
"No, I rather think it's good. So let's say he did me a favor, long way around.
And let's get back to what I'm talking about. I've just explained that if I believe the pump to be harmful and am wrong, I lose nothing. On the other hand, if I believe the pump to be harmless and am wrong, I will be helping to destroy the world. To be sure, I've lived most of my life already, and I suppose I can argue myself into believing that I have no great cause to love humanity. However, only a few people have hurt me, and if I hurt everyone in return, that is unconscionable usury. Then, too, if you'd rather have a less noble reason, Selene, consider my daughter. Just before I left for the moon, she had applied for permission to have a child. She'll probably get it, and before long I'll be, if you don't mind my saying so, a grandfather. Somehow, I'd like to see my grandchild have a normal life expectancy. So I prefer to believe the pump is dangerous and to act on that belief. Selene said intensely, "But here's my point. Is the pump dangerous or is it not? I mean the truth, and not what anyone wants to believe." "I should ask you that. You're the intuitionist. What does your intuition say?" "But that's what bothers me, Ben. I can't make it really certain either way. I tend to feel the pump is harmful, but maybe that's because I want to believe that." "All right. Maybe you do. Why?" Selene smiled ruefully and shrugged her shoulders. "It would be fun for Baron to be wrong. When he thinks he's certain, he's so vituperatively certain. I know. You want to see his face when he's forced to back down. I'm well aware of how intense such a desire can be. For instance, if the pump were dangerous and I could prove it, I might conceivably be hailed as the savior of humanity. And yet, I swear that I'd be more interested in the look on Hallam's face. I'm not proud of that feeling, so I suspect that what I'll do is insist on an equal share of the credit with Lamont, who deserves it after all, and confine my pleasure to watching Lamont's face when he watches Hallam's face. The pettishness will then be one place removed. But I'm beginning to speak nonsense. Selene."
"Yes, Ben?"
"When did you find out you were an intuitionist?"
"I don't quite know."
"You took physics in college, I imagine."
"Oh, yes. Some math, too, but I was never good at that. Come to think of it, I wasn't particularly good in physics, either. I used to guess the answers when I was desperate. You know, guess what I was supposed to do to get the right answers. Very often it worked, and then I would be asked to explain why I had done what I did, and I couldn't do that very well. They suspected me of cheating, but could never prove it."
"They didn't suspect intuitionism?"
"I don't think so. But then I didn't either, until, well, one of my first sex mates was a physicist. In fact, he was the father of my child, assuming he really supplied the sperm sample. He had a physics problem, and he told me about it when we were lying in bed afterwards, just to have something to talk about, I suppose. And I said, 'You know what it sounds to me like?' and told him. He tried it just for the fun of it, he said, and it worked. In fact, that was the first step to the pionizer, which you said was much better than the proton synchrotron."
"You mean that was your idea?"
Dennison put his finger under the dripping water and paused as he was about to put it to his mouth. "Is this water safe?"
"It's perfectly sterile," said Selene, "and it goes into the general reservoir for treatment. It's saturated with sulfates, carbonates, and a few other items, however. You won't like the taste."
Dennison rubbed his finger on his briefs. "You invented the pionizer?"
"Not invented. I had the original concept. It took lots of development, mostly by Baron."
Dennison shook his head.
"You know, Selene, you're an amazing phenomenon. You should be under observation by the molecular biologists."
"Should I? That's not my idea of a thrill."
"About half a century ago, there came the climax to the big trend toward genetic engineering."
"I know. It flopped and was thrown out of court. It's illegal now, that whole type of study, insofar as research can be made illegal. I know people who've done work on it just the same."
"I dare say. On intuitionism?"
"No, I don't think so."
"Ah, but that's my point. At the height of the push for genetic engineering, there was this attempt to stimulate intuitionism. Almost all the great scientists had intuitive ability, of course, and there was the feeling that this was the single great key to creativity. One could argue that superior capacity for intuition was the product of a particular gene combination, and there were all sorts of speculations as to which gene combination that was. I suspect that there are many possible types that would satisfy. And I suspect that if you are consulting your intuition here, you are correct. But there were also those who insisted that one gene, or one small related group of genes, was of particular importance to the combination, so that you might speak of an intuition gene, and then the whole thing collapsed. As I said. But before it collapsed, Dennison went on, there had been attempts to alter genes to increase the intensity of intuitionism, and there were those who insisted that some success had been achieved. The altered genes entered the gene pool, I'm positive, and if you happened to inherit, were any of your grandparents involved in the program? Not so far as I know, said Selene, but I can't rule it out. One of them might have been, for all I can say. If you don't mind, I'm not going to investigate the matter. I don't want to know. Perhaps not. The whole field grew fearfully unpopular with the general public, and anyone who can be considered the product of genetic engineering would not exactly be greeted gladly. Intuitionism, they said, for instance, was inseparable from certain undesirable characteristics. Well, thank you. They said, to possess intuition is to inspire a certain envy and enmity in others. Even as gentle and saint-like an intuitionist as Michael Faraday aroused the envy and hatred of Humphrey Davy. Who's to say that it doesn't take a certain flaw in character to be capable of arousing envy? And in your case, Selene said, surely I don't arouse your envy and hatred. I don't think you do. What about Neville, though? Selene was silent. Dennison said, by the time you got to Neville, you were well known as an intuitionist, I suppose. Not well known, I would say. Some physicists suspected it, I'm sure. However, they don't like to give up credit here any more than on Earth, and I suppose they convinced themselves, more or less, that whatever I had said to them was just a meaningless guess. But Baron knew, of course. I see. Dennison paused. Selene's lips twitched. Somehow I get the feeling that you want to say, oh, that's why he bothers with you. No, of course not, Selene. You're quite attractive enough to be desired for your own sake. I think so, too, but every little bit helps, and Baron was bound to be interested in my intuitionism. Why shouldn't he be? Only he insisted I keep my job as a tourist guide. He said I was an important natural resource of the moon, and he didn't want Earth monopolizing me the way they monopolized the synchrotron. An odd thought. But perhaps it was that the fewer who knew of your intuitionism, the fewer would suspect your contribution to what would otherwise be put to his sole credit. Now you sound like Baron yourself. Do I? And is it possible he gets rather annoyed with you when your intuitionism is working particularly well? Selene shrugged. Baron is a suspicious man. We all have our faults. Is it wise to be alone with me, then? Selene said sharply, now don't get hurt because I defend him. He doesn't really suspect the possibility of sexual misbehavior between us. You're from Earth. In fact, I might as well tell you he encourages our companionship. He thinks I can learn from you. And have you? Asked Dennison coldly. I have. Yet, though that may be his chief reason for encouraging our friendship, it isn't mine. What's yours? As you well know, said Selene, and as you want to hear me say, I enjoy your company. Otherwise, I could get what I want in considerably less time. All right, Selene. Friends? Friends, absolutely. What have you learned from me, then? May I know? That would take a while to explain. You know that the reason we can't set up a pump station anywhere we want to is that we can't locate the para-universe, even though they can locate us. That might be because they are much more intelligent or much more technologically advanced than we are. Not necessarily the same thing, muttered Dennison. I know. That's why I put in the or. But it might also be that we are neither particularly stupid nor particularly backward. It might be something as simple as the fact that they offer the harder target. If the strong nuclear interaction is stronger in the para-universe,
they'd be bound to have much smaller suns and, very likely, much smaller planets. Their individual world would be harder to locate than ours would be. Or then again, she went on, suppose it's the electromagnetic field they detect. The electromagnetic field of a planet is much larger than the planet itself and is much easier to locate. And that would mean that while they can detect Earth, they can't detect the Moon, which has no electromagnetic field to speak of. That's why, perhaps, we failed to set up a pump station on the Moon. And if their small planets lack a significant electromagnetic field, we can't locate them. Denison said, "It's an attractive thought." Next, consider the inter-universal exchange in properties that serve to weaken their strong nuclear interaction, cooling their suns, while strengthening ours, heating and exploding our suns. What might that imply? Suppose they can collect energy one way without our help, but only at ruinously low efficiencies. Under ordinary circumstances, that would therefore be utterly impractical. They would need us to help direct concentrated energy in their direction by supplying tungsten-186 to them and accepting plutonium-186 in return. But suppose our galactic arm implodes into a quasar. That would produce an energy concentration in the neighborhood of the solar system enormously greater than now exists, and one that might persist for over 1,000,000 years. Once that quasar forms, even a ruinously low efficiency becomes sufficient. It wouldn't matter to them, therefore, whether we are destroyed or not. In fact, we might argue that it would be safer for them if we did explode. Until we do, we might end the pump for any of a variety of reasons, and they would be helpless to start it again. After the explosion, they are home free. No one could interfere. And that's why those people who say, if the pump is so dangerous, why don't those terribly clever paramen stop it, don't know what they're talking about. Did Neville give you that argument? Yes, he did. But the parasun would keep cooling down, wouldn't it? What does that matter? Said Selene impatiently. With the pump, they wouldn't be dependent on their sun for anything. Denison took a deep breath. You can't possibly know this, Selene, but there was a rumor on Earth that Lamont received a message from the paramen to the effect that the pump was dangerous, but that they couldn't stop it. No one took it seriously, of course, but suppose it's true. Suppose Lamont did receive such a message. Might it be that some of the paramen were humanitarian enough to wish not to destroy a world with cooperating intelligences upon it, and were prevented by the opposition of an oh-so-practical majority? Selene nodded. I suppose that's possible. All this I knew, or rather intuited, before you came on the scene. But then you said that nothing between one and the infinite made any sense, remember? Of course. All right. The differences between our universe and the para-universe lie so obviously in the strong nuclear interaction that so far it's all that's been studied. But there is more than one interaction. There are four. In addition to the strong nuclear, there is the electromagnetic, the weak nuclear, and the gravitational, with intensity ratios of 130:1 to 10^-10 to 10^-42. But if four, why not an infinite number, with all the others too weak to be detectable or to influence our universe in any way? Denison said, if an interaction is too weak to be detectable or to exert influence in any way, then by any operational definition it doesn't exist. In this universe, said Selene with a snap, who knows what does or does not exist in the para-universes? With an infinite number of possible interactions, each of which can vary infinitely in intensity compared to any one of them taken as standard, the number of different possible universes that can exist is infinite. Possibly the infinity of the continuum, Aleph 1 rather than Aleph null. Selene frowned. What does that mean? It's not important. Go on. Selene said, instead then, of trying to work with the one para-universe that has impinged itself on us and which may not suit our needs at all, why don't we instead try to work out which universe, out of all the infinite possibilities, best suits us and is most easily located?
Let us design a universe, for after all, whatever we design must exist, and search for it.
Dennison smiled. Delany, I've thought of exactly the same thing. And while there's no law that states I can't be completely wrong, it's very unlikely that anyone as brilliant as myself can be completely wrong when anyone as brilliant as yourself comes to exactly the same conclusion independently.
You know what?
What? Asked Delany.
I'm beginning to like your damn moon food, or getting used to it anyway. Let's go back home and eat, and then we can start working out our plans. And you know what else?
What?
As long as we'll be working together, how about one kiss, as experimentalist to intuitionist?
Delany considered. She said, We've both of us kissed and been kissed a good many times, I suppose. How about doing it as man to woman?
I think I can manage that. But what do I do so as not to be clumsy about it? What are the moon rules for kissing?
Follow instinct, said Delany casually.
Carefully, Dennison placed his arms behind his back and leaned towards Delany. Then, after a while, he placed his arms behind her back.